I realize in the bulletin it says Abraham, Hagar, Ishmael, and visitors. We're actually not going to talk about the visitors that much, but we are going to talk about Abraham, Hagar, and Ishmael. And I will tell you from the very beginning, this is the question that I am going to be asking you, is do you trust God? Do you trust God? It's funny because if you would say, I'm a Christian, I believe in God. Believing in God is one thing, actually. You say, well, I believe in the God exists. I believe there is a God. But when you start saying, do you trust God? That's when it becomes personal, right? Do I trust God? Do I trust who he is? And this is what we're kind of going to be talking about today. And we'll start with Sarah and Abraham. And most of this takes place in between Genesis 16 to 18, and I'll touch on Genesis 21 a little bit. So if you have Bibles, you can turn to them. If you don't have a Bible and you'd like one, you can raise your hand, and we'll bring one by you. Derek, they're on that bookshelf. If anyone wants a Bible, just raise your hands, and we'll plop one over to you. If you've got your own Bible app or whatever, Genesis 16 to 18 is what we're going to be looking at today. So just raise your hands above the plane of your head, and that should be fine. So starting from Genesis 16, there's this there's this story, and it's funny because I guess they teach this in high school, but when we talk about it as adults, it sounds really much more horrible than you would realize. So it starts off with this, right? Genesis 16. Now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. So to break it down, essentially what happens is Sarah, who is barren, who cannot have kids, gets this promise. She leaves her land, and God says, you know, I'm going to make you a great nation, God, Abram. You're going to have many children and father of many. And they wait, and they wait, and they wait, and they're like, oh, there's no kids coming. So Sarah goes, hey, I have this Egyptian servant of mine. Why don't you sleep with her and have babies with her? And then when the baby comes out, it'll be our baby because I let, you know, she's like a surrogate. And at first when I thought, I read this, I thought, oh, that's just so crazy. I mean, like, who does that nowadays? And then I realized, oh, actually, people still do that today. It's actually not that different. It sounds in some ways horrifying, but actually, maybe culture hasn't changed that much. Now, understanding culturally back then, among the tribes and nomadic people around that time, this was pretty common, actually. If you, the wife, couldn't have kids herself, she could give a servant to sleep with them, her husband, to have children that way, and they would claim the children as their own. The difference is, God doesn't sort of think this is such a great idea, actually. And it's interesting because what Sarah's trying to do is achieve the blessing and the promise from God her own way. Again, it's this idea of sort of stealing blessings or taking them before their time. But the bigger question at the end is, do they trust God? Does Sarah trust God? Does Abram trust God? Now, if we look at this passage, we actually see that Sarah doesn't, because she says, behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. In other words, it's God's fault I don't have kids. And so I've got to take matters into my own hands, and I'll get kids my own way. I'll get them via my Egyptian maidservant. Now, what's interesting is Abram, he doesn't say anything. There's no like, I don't know about that. I think we should trust God. No, I don't know about sleeping with your servant so we can have babies. No, he doesn't say anything. He's more like, okay then, wife, if you say so, I guess it shall be so. Now, if we think a little bit back, does this whole picture sound like something else that happened just earlier in the Bible? Does this sound at all like Adam and Eve? Where Eve says, oh, I see this and it's good. Husband, take this and eat. And the husband just goes, sure, whatever, I'll eat this. And in the end, they all kind of end up. Now, if you look at it language-wise, it's actually a direct parallel. It actually matches up scripturally very similarly, word and language-wise, to Adam and Eve. And what you're seeing here is that there's still no change in humanity. They're still in it for themselves. They're still acting on their own passions or their own desires or their own way of thinking. And what's happening here is Abraham and Sarah don't trust God. They might say they trust God, but then they say, well, maybe we should do this instead. Maybe we should take matters into our own hands. This is something you're going to see reoccur over and over again in the Bible. This idea of taking things into our own hands and trying to solve it ourselves because we don't trust God. We don't think he's going to come through. I realize one of the reasons we don't think he's going to come through is because he's taking too long. They're waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting. And she's like, at this point, I think she's 86, right? She's like, well, I already know I'm barren. When is this going to happen? When is this baby going to come along? I'm waiting, I'm waiting, I'm waiting. And they become impatient. And they say, well, there must be an alternative way to get there. I think as humans, we're definitely prone to that. And the smallest example is when you're driving in your car and you're stuck in traffic and you're waiting and you're waiting in traffic. In the back of your head, you're thinking, huh, if I turn here and I go down this road, I'm pretty sure that should be faster. And then you turn down that road and then you find out that there's about 50 cars who had the same idea as you did. And then you think, I know, I'll turn right here and then make a left, and then I'll make another left and I'll be another road. And before you know it, you've gone way out of your route and you're like getting more and more agitated because your plan didn't work out the right way. And then you think to yourself, I wish Google Maps was better. I wish they could tell me the alternative route sooner so I don't have to deal with this. But you have this idea, that's just in your regular life. But in your actual life, the same things sort of happen. We get impatient. We start to worry. So we start to tinker. We start to change. We start to panic. We start to try to take things into our own hand instead of stopping and saying, okay, God, let me look to you. The big question you have to ask is, do you trust God? Because if you ask that question, the second thing you have to ask is, well, is God trustworthy? Is it worthwhile to trust him? Because when you ask whether it's worthy or worthwhile to trust God, if God is trustworthy, you have to start saying, well, actually, he hasn't really let me down, has he? All the times I feel like he's let me down is probably because I've run off in my own way, made a mess of things, and I want him to bail me out at the last second. And he probably still does bail you out, but it's still suffering along the way. And you're like, well, maybe God is and has always been trustworthy. See, if you think about this some more, right? So Sarah is thinking to herself, okay, look, we have received this promise from God. You're going to be a father of many nations. We don't have any kids. We've got to get one. Let's do this. But if you actually remember what God's promise is this. Abram, I will make your name great. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. In other words, God has said from the beginning, look, I am in control of this situation. I am the one who's going to bring this forth. I am the one who's going to do this. And yet, here they are, taking things in their own hands and saying, okay, well, sure, God says he'll do it, but since he's taking so long, I'm going to do it myself. It's a question of, are you stealing God's blessings before their time, or are you trusting him? Now, see, when we start talking about trusting God, and you're saying, okay, well, look, this is a little bit different, Bert. This is a very specific promise that Abram received from God about being a father of many nations and being blessed. For us, our problem is like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what God wants me to do. Should I stay in this job? Should I study this in my course? Should I marry this person? I don't know. God hasn't given me specific instructions. I don't have a specific blessing from him. How can I trust God if I don't know exactly what he wants me to do? See, if we're looking at that problem this way, you'll always be frustrated. Because you're looking to God for Lego instructions on how to build the certain Lego model that you hope you're making. But when God says trust him, it actually means if you trust me, you will obey what I say. And our first response is, God, but I don't know what you're saying, and that's my frustration. Do I stay here or do I go? I don't know. And God says, but I've told you to obey my commands. In other words, to live holy, to walk humbly, to love mercy, to walk in justice, to love one another, to love your enemy, to show compassion, to be generous. And you're like, but Bert, that doesn't solve my problem. It doesn't solve the question of where I'm supposed to be going and what I'm supposed to be doing. No, but if you trust God, you're trusting that in this walk, in this process of walking with him, that those doors will be opened and those paths will be made clear. See, that's what trust is, actually. Trust is saying, okay, well, God, you've given me your commands. You've shown me the way to walk, and so I will walk in that in faith and trust that everything else will sort itself out. The amazing thing is when you start to do that, God has shown you a way to live life. He's teaching you how to live life, not how to get certain things. Do you understand that kind of difference? One of the biggest things they have with giving aid to third world countries is sometimes they will just drop food down or they will just provide supplies. And they always say, well, you can feed them like this, but they don't learn how to farm for themselves. They don't know how to build pumps themselves. You're not training them how to live. You're just giving them droplets of supplies. One of the problems we had as missionaries when we came over, we came in and we saw these churches, and what they would rely on are these short-term missions teams that would come in the summer, and we would just use them, and then the rest of the year they wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know how to grow as believers. When we're asking God to provide certain things for us, jobs, careers, hopes, you're asking him just to solve problems, whereas God is trying to teach you how to live life. The person who can walk in love, to love him, to have peace, to trust him, is able to work in any circumstance. You see, that's when you discover, okay, well, maybe I'm looking at the wrong things in my job. I want to find a job where the managers are better and know how to develop me perfectly. Good luck trying to find that job. I want to find a job that gives me such good satisfaction and at the same time pays me lots of money. I want to find a husband or a wife who loves me for who I am and will always take care of me. It works about as well as the same day that you're both sick at the same time. So you realize, oh, who's going to take care of me now? We're both sick. You start to realize, okay, maybe this is not the thing that we should be looking for. If you are walking and following God and you're seeking after him, you're realizing, oh, my peace and my love and my joy come from you. God, you have given me the tools to live life, and so I would trust you to open the doors as they come along. The other part about sealing blessings and trusting God comes in being patient. And it's hard to be patient. Now, we want to be patient for a lot of things. I think for a lot of times we think it's a job, or I'm patient for my significant other to finally come into my life, or I'm patient for my significant other to finally propose to me, or I'm patient for God to heal me, or I'm patient for God to change my financial situation. And I think it's amazing to struggle through that patience. And I understand the temptation to try to change it yourself. Now, it doesn't mean that you sit around doing nothing and waiting for God to just change your situation. So if you're out of work and you're looking for a job, it doesn't mean you stay at home and play PlayStation all day, because that's not what God's asking you to do. It's still saying to trust him, but to keep walking. When I was doing youth ministry, when I was younger, and there's this guy, he was talking to me, he's all like, hey, so Bert, can I talk to you about something? I said, yeah, sure, what? And if you're a youth leader and you're talking to a teenage guy, you know that he's probably going to bring up one thing. It's probably some girl. So he goes, so I was at this bus stop the other day, and I got on this bus. And I'm on this bus, and I think it's the right bus, But then I look out the window and I see another bus. And that's the right bus. But I'm on this bus. And I don't want to be on this bus anymore, but because I kind of want to go onto that bus. And I said to him, are we talking about buses here? let me guess. Are you having girl problems? No, I'm just saying there's another bus that I saw. And I said, well, you shouldn't have gone on the wrong bus. He said, yeah, but I just thought I could just be on this bus for now until something better comes along. And I said, oh, you guys all say, oh, but oh, sure. How many people do we know have done the same thing? It's this idea of, well, God, maybe I can just have a little bit of this blessing now and get some later and find the real one later. And actually, God is saying, you're not trusting me. Learn to walk in obedience. Learn to walk in his rhythm and his steps. What if life was not about the career that you had? What if God's desire for your life was to have your character and your heart shaped and molded to be like his? What if he wanted to teach you what it meant to be full of compassion? What if he wanted to teach you what it meant to be a person of peace? What if those are the things that really count in life? It's funny because when we do stop and we do think about what is meant, what is important, you realize, actually, God, I wish as a person I had more faith, that I had more peace in every circumstance. God, I wish I had boldness and faith to speak out against injustice. I wish I had faith and boldness to know how to help my friends who are struggling. God, I wish I could be used by you to actually help change people's circumstances that are struggling around us. See, God's desire is not for the outside to be fixed because he desires to change your inside first, to shape who you are, not just what you do. It's amazing because as he shapes that, he also opens up doors for your future, for your relationships. And he brings along the people at the right time in the right places as you walk in obedience to him. But it takes faith and takes patience, takes trust, and takes a willingness to obey his word. The question is, God trustworthy? Has he proved himself faithful to you? Has he proved himself trustworthy? Has he proved himself to be good? I think for all of us here, we would have to stop and say, you know what, actually, God, you are the one who has always been trustworthy, that I can always turn to. In fact, you're the only one who has been good. I've been let down by my friends before, betrayed by them. I've been let down by my family. I've been disappointed by my managers and my teachers. I don't know where to find really good people, but God, you are and have been all these things. And then it becomes the question, well, why don't we trust him then? If God is that perfect leader, if he's the one who has always been this way, why don't we trust him? Well, we probably don't trust him because we're a bit impatient. The most amazing thing is God not just shows his love and trustworthiness in the day-to-day, he gave us his son to die on the cross as the ultimate demonstration of his trust and his love for us. He gave the greatest sacrifice so that we could have this life. See, looking a little bit deeper, it's actually, will you trust him? If he is trustworthy, then our trust of him should be straightforward. If we've been let down by someone else, if we've ever found that we can't trust others, then we turn to the one whose name is faithful and true, just like he's called in Revelation, the one who is faithful and true. So moving on in the story, we actually come to Hagar, Sarah, and Abram. We look at them a little bit deeper. So it's pretty brutal what happens. So obviously in Sarah's head, it goes like this, right? In her head, it was like this. You sleep with her, she has a baby, the baby comes out, we take the baby, it's like it's ours, and everything's great. It'll all work out fine. Now, see, in hindsight, you would look back at them and probably advise, I don't know if that's going to be a good idea. I think there's going to be a lot of emotions at play, and I think people might be upset. And generally, yes, you might get an error, but it's going to really complicate things. And that's exactly what happens. It gets really complicated really fast. Hagar, the line in the Bible is a very small one. She says, it says, she discovered that she was pregnant, and she looked at Sarah with contempt. Now, actually, the translation of the word contempt is a little bit deeper than that. It's actually the same word that they use when God blessed Abraham, but not the blessing part, the cursing part. So in the blessing part, when God says, to those who curse you, I also will curse, this is the same word that Hagar uses, that they use to say Hagar to Sarah. In other words, she curses Sarah. It's almost like, bleep you, lady, I got a baby coming, something that you couldn't provide. And you can imagine this could be like an episode of Hollyoaks or I don't know. I don't watch those shows. I was going to name another one. Actually, you know what it could be like? It could be like Jeremy Kyle or like Jerry Springer. You can imagine Abraham, Hagar, and Sarah all on the stage. That's the mom of my baby. And they can like be shouting at each other and be like, I gave him to you just for that day. And now you claim him as your own. It's your fault, girlfriend. You can't have babies. God don't love you. And then like, she's like, hold me back, Abram, hold me back. And he's like, Abram's. So it's kind of this scenario where, because we look at this and think, oh, this is so far removed from reality. But actually, this is on TV like every day. And it's brutal, right? It's brutal because if we start breaking down what the issues are, it's kind of these. So we look at Hagar, and Hagar's issue is, these are the three things: pride, bitterness, and ambivalence. Hagar is full of pride, Sarah is full of bitterness, and Abram is full of ambivalence, which basically means like, I don't know, I don't care, it's not my problem, I don't know what to do anymore. I can't control these women, I'm just going to go to my room and play FIFA. Hey, laughing about, that's men for you. Okay, so we look at Hagar and pride. So Hagar comes out, and she, you understand, she's a servant. She's been taken from her country. She's an Egyptian servant. And she's displaced, and she's here. And Sarah's probably thinking, well, look, you know, she's just a servant. When she has the baby, she'll go back to her servant life. But you understand what happens. She actually has a baby. And for that time back then, for the one who has babies, that's what makes them a woman. That's what makes them a mother. That's what gives them the identity. And she gets this, and she has this pride. This pride of like, you know what? I am better than you. And I have this child of promise, not you. And that's why she looks at Sarah and is like, you can sense that kind of pride and that arrogance and that I am better than you attitude that comes out. And then we look at Sarah. And Sarah's thing is she's bitter. And she's been bitter for a very long time. She's been very bitter at God. And we know this because she says, God has closed up my womb. She's been barren. In other words, her identity of being a mother was removed from her from the very beginning. She did not have this joy. And for the mothers that I've met who cannot have children, they cry. They weep because they feel like this has been taken from me. And it's heartbreaking. And this is what Sarah has struggled with for years, for decades. It's one of those things where you hope, well, maybe God has healed me. Maybe God has healed me this time, and maybe this time we will have a baby. And every month it's like, nope, no baby, not happening again. It's this horrible cycle of emotional high and then depression, and then at some point it just becomes like, I give up. God has left me and has left me cursed. And it's this bitterness, the seed of bitterness, which is why she says, well, I'm going to get this baby another way. Now, we see this bitterness get lashed out now physically. So what happens is Sarah says to Abram, may the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me. Now Sarah is really ticked off at her husband. And she's blaming him for what's happened. And it's actually, you can see that there's bitterness, not just between her and Hagar, and her and God, but there's also bitterness between her and her husband. It also explains why Abraham is so ready to just give in to whatever she says. Because somewhere along the way, this relationship broke down. And so Sarah, in this bitterness, she says, look, it's your fault. And I'm so angry and so frustrated. And I'm so bitter that I want you to sort it out. And what happens is Abraham says, well, you just do whatever you want. And then Sarah basically just goes and starts beating Hagar pretty much in this kind of outward expression of bitterness. Which brings us to Abram. Abram's line in this in verse 6 says, but Abram said to Sarah, behold, your servant is in your power, do to her as you please. In other words, whatever. I don't know. I don't care. See, it's actually I don't care. I don't care what happens to my servant. I don't care what happens to this baby that's in there. I don't care what happens to you. Just do whatever you want. And in this picture of Abram, Hagar, Sarah, you get this picture of like, oh my gosh, the Bible knows humanity so well. This is exactly what humans are like. This is what's like sometimes in our families or with our friends, where someone just switches off, or someone's so bitter, or someone gets jealous, or someone gets angry and full of pride. And everything just starts to fall apart. You know, and they had hoped in the beginning, Sarah's great plan was this is going to work out awesome. In reality, just brings pain. In other words, when they stopped looking at God and trusting him and said, well, I'm just going to trust myself, you find that actually didn't work out the way you hoped. It brings up pain that's not just spiritual, but it's actually mental anguish, emotional anguish, and for Hagar, physical pain. They're being brought against one another. And so Sarah deals harshly with her, and Hagar actually runs away. She runs away to just die outside. She tries to escape. In that little picture, you get a picture of humanity for a moment, a microcosm of what sin does to humanity. But what we see from here is actually God is still ridiculously faithful, ridiculously trustworthy, and ridiculously redeeming. He does not have to do this. He has made a covenant and a promise to Abram, and he doesn't have to, but he is willing to fulfill that. He still goes back, and you'll see now just how abundant it is. The first thing he does is he restores Hagar, and he teaches her humility. So she's out there, and she's crying, and she's going to die, and the angel appears to her and says, what's going on? She says, oh, I'm running away because your mistress is beating me, and now I'm going to just die here. And verse 7, the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? She said, I'm fleeing from my mistress Sarai. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. The angel of the Lord also said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call him Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen. So this is an interesting thing, right? So this servant is being beat by her mistress at home. She's still pregnant. And then this angel appears and says, you know, go back. Yeah, I think you should go back. Now, that's generally what we say is bad advice in social service and counseling. It's basically, if someone is abusing you, leave that situation and don't go back. But what God is doing is he's actually trying to redeem something because he sees something a little bit more. The question is, why does Hagar go back? Why does she go back? She knows that the mistress is really angry at her, but she also knows the bigger issue was her pride and her arrogance that set the whole thing off. What God does here is as he begins to turn it around. And he says, well, you know what? You're saying, in our heads, we think, well, yeah, she goes back. She's forced into humility. She's forced to submit. Is that what's going on? Now, actually, we'll understand this by Hagar's response in verse 13. In verse 13, she says, "She called the name of the Lord who spoke to her. 'You are a God of seeing.' For she said, 'Truly I have seen him who looks after me.' Therefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It lies between Kadesh and Bered." See, at that moment, Hagar understands, God, you are bigger than all of this. She calls him the God who sees. Now, what that is, it indicates that this God is unlike every other God she's ever seen or heard of before. Because this God not only sees her situation here, the God knows that she's pregnant. She knows she's pregnant with, a boy, and he tells her these things, and she begins to understand, God, you are greater than all of this. And so I submit to you. I lay down my pride because you are greater. And she goes back because she trusts him. She has set aside her pride. And she discovers actually the joy of humbly trusting in God. She's not being taught to be humble in front of a bad mistress, Sarai, but rather she's taught to humble herself before God. Even greater than we see later that God fulfills his promise to her, and Ishmael, her son, even becomes part of the promise of the covenant, even though he shouldn't have to be. Second thing we see is Sarah and her bitterness and what happens with that. In about 13 years later, when Abram's 99, three visitors come to their place. Before the visitors come, God talks to Abram and says, look, we're going to change your name. You're going to be named Abraham, and we're going to call your wife Sarah with an H, not Sarai with an I. Now, this is pretty interesting. So the first thing is Sarai and Sarah mean the same thing. They both mean princess. So changing one letter or rewinding one letter backwards from I to H doesn't seem to change a whole lot. But it does, because what God is trying to do is God is actually trying to redefine Sarai. So you were given your name by your family, your earthly family, and she was given the name princess. What God is saying is, you are my princess. In other words, he's saying you're not just a princess to the earthly people, but you are my princess. In other words, what God is trying to do is let his love melt the bitterness of her heart. And begin to open that up and say, you know what? My love for you is so great. I still value you as my treasure, as my princess. You are royalty still to me. He does some more things, right? He opens up her womb to have a baby. He says, you're going to have a child. Now, it's funny because her response is like, in the Bible, it's actually like she's already had menopause. She's past the age of being able to have. It says she's past the time of womanhood. And it's like, so she's like, she laughs. She laughs out loud, right? So in this, in Genesis 18, it says, these three visitors come to Abram and says, where's Sarah, your wife? And Abram says, she's in the tent. The Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him, spying. And now Sarah and Abram and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of woman had ceased to be with Sarah. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? The Lord said to Abram, why does Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you. About this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, but you did laugh. It's like brutal, right? It's like, no, I didn't laugh. No, you did. Touché. Yes, I did, in fact. The question is, why did she laugh? Now, she laughed maybe because she thought it was funny. Ha ha, I'm so old, I'm going to have a baby. Oh, it's going to be really fun when they're two and screaming. And we would say that might be true because Abraham also laughs when God tells him this. Abraham laughs. He goes, ha, 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 yeah, right. Why don't we just use Ishmael instead? I think I'm a bit old to have kids. God says, no, we're going to have your own son. His name be called Isaac. We know actually there's a little bit more to her laughing because then when God says, why are you laughing? When God asks that question, It's because he sees something deeper in her heart. She's not laughing because it's funny or it's ironic. She's laughing because there's something in her heart that springs out that laughter. A laughter that's coming out of bitterness. As in, haha, as if, God. Now? You're going to give me a baby now? We know this is true as well, because then when God says, why did you laugh? She says, no, I didn't laugh. You only deny it if you didn't, if it's something shameful, right? Because she knows she's laughing out of the wrong motive. And then God cuts her right to the heart and says, no, you did. And what God is trying to do is he's trying to say, look, you are bitter about this. And I am trying, and I am turning this situation around. But you have to let go of that bitterness. You have to let go of that. You have to let God heal that. In other words, let God say, the time has come for the healing to come forward. Don't still hold on to it. The sad thing is, Sarah doesn't let go of the bitterness. She still holds on to it, and the baby comes out. We know she doesn't hold on to the bitterness because in Genesis 21, when Isaac's born, she says, I don't like this Ishmael and Hagar hanging around here. Abraham, send them away. I don't want them here anymore. In other words, that bitterness still stayed there like a root deep in her heart. And all of God's attempts to say, you are my princess, and I give you a child, and your old age, you will still have joy, and you will have this life, and you will still be, you know, this father of many nations with Abraham. She still has that seed of bitterness. Never at that moment where she forgives, receives, draws them back into the family, but rather she continues to reject and cast it away. It's heartbreaking because we know people like this too, right? We can tell there's a bit of bitterness in their heart and they can't seem to break out of it. And you say, you know, you've just got to let it go. You've got to let go. I say, no, no, I don't want to let it go. It's been part of me for so long. God wants to redefine her, but she wants to hold on to the hurt. Then we look finally at Abram. Abram, who was full of ambivalence, God ends up giving him lots of responsibility, which is a pretty good way to deal with someone who just can't be bothered. Now, we know this because actually God suddenly speaks to Abram. Look, I'm giving you a new name. Abram means exalted father. The exalted father is all blessing, no responsibility. You are an awesome dad. You're awesome. You're awesome. No matter what you do, you're awesome. You're an awesome dad. You're exalted. You're an exalted father. His name gets changed to Abraham, which means father of multitudes. That's the opposite. Father of multitudes, well, I got a whole lot of blessing, but I got a whole lot of responsibility. I'm a father of multitudes? Oh my gosh, I got to really get myself in shape. I got to make sure I'm responsible. And God is saying, that's the first thing. The second thing God says is, look, you got to circumcise everybody. You got to circumcise all the men, all the servants of your household. They all got to be circumcised. Now that's a pretty big responsibility. Number one, Abram's got to organize everyone, explain to them what's going to happen to them, get them all to agree, then sit down and actually do it. Which is, if he's pretty lazy, he pretty much saying, yeah, oh, don't know. I want to go back to being exalted father. But he does. God says, you need to circumcise them all, and he does. He sits them all down and says, we're going to go through this process now. It would be awkward, but I won't close my eyes. Let's get on with it. You have this idea that actually God is saying, look, I'm going to use these things, and I want to shift you from being someone who is not caring and irresponsible to someone who cares and is responsible. And we see actually Abram change. In Genesis 21, when Sarah tells Abram to send Hagar away, Abram cries out to God, God, don't. Don't send them away. You know, they're still precious. In other words, he takes on that responsibility of them. He doesn't just say, oh, whatever my wife wants to do. But then that's when God actually responds to him and says, no, it's okay, send them away. I will still bless them, and I will make Ishmael a father of many nations. Because the promise that God made to Abraham, I will continue it because Ishmael is still your son. He will still receive that blessing. Because that is how good God is. That his blessing just pours out just like that. But it was amazing to see actually Abram's willingness to be redefined. This willingness to say, you know what, God, actually, I trust you. And this circumcision thing sounds really weird, but I trust you. And changing my name at this age, now that I'm 99 years old, I'm going to have a name change, I still trust you. And God said, well, you're also going to have a baby, and Abram laughs, ha 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 ha. But he still trusts God. That laughter wasn't out of bitterness, probably more out of irony. What we begin to see is actually God is looking to do a deep work in your life. He actually wants to redefine you. He wants to name you. He wants to call you his child and tell you who you are and where you're going to be going and how things are going to unfold. But it means for some of us, it means to start letting go of some stuff. One of the big ones is bitterness. Now, bitterness comes out when you start with being disappointed, or your expectations weren't met, or you were let down, or you're bitter because you've been hurt by someone. To let God deal with that, you have to say, you know, God, this expectation, this hope, this hurt, this was caused to me by someone. And God, I want you to come to me at the beginning of that and restore me. For Sarah, her thing was her womb was closed. But she let her womb being closed mean her heart being closed too. And God went all the way back to the beginning and said, you know, but now I open your womb and I change your name and I open that up. And Sarah just needed to receive that blessing and that presence with God. The second thing with pride, if we're full of pride and we're full of that we think we're better, you have to stop and just rest and say, you know, God, I humble myself. You are the one I can trust because, God, you are the all-seeing God. You see all things. And finally, if you are someone who just can't be bothered, ask God then, God, what am I responsible for? Who is my brother? Who am I to be caring for? Will you trust him? We understand actually Abram's family was completely broken, such a mess. But here, God was transforming and redefining it. And he wants to do the same for you, to redefine and transform your families, to bring healing among them, to restore husband and wife. Your family, your job, your studies, will you trust him? To live as he asks. Let's pray. Lord, we look to you and we ask you to come and meet with us, to speak to our hearts, that we can trust you with all that we have. Father, you are our Savior and our King, and you have always been faithful and trustworthy. Let us continue to look to you. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.